Welcome to the Social Podcast, where no discussion or debate is off limits.
Hey, everybody. It is Thursday, and welcome to The Social. Joining the panel today, actor, comedian, Darren Rose. Welcome back. Nice to see you,
thank you. It's been a while. It's delightful to be here.
Yes. I know you've got a little one who's almost one at home. You've been real busy.
I've been, my wife's been busier than me. More work, you know, for her than
well
me.
Said.
But, for me, it's just delightful. Oh, my gosh, she's so adorable. My wife's like, I'm exhausted. Yeah. Oh, my God, I'm going to shoot you. I'm like, isn't this fun? We got a new outfit.
Well, great to have you here. We can't wait to dive into some of those parenting stories. But first, we are diving into one which is going to definitely affect some parents and beyond. Mm-hmm. We are kicking things off with some really big news coming from the sports world. So the federal government is putting Hockey Canada's funding on ice in the wake of the organization's response to an alleged 2018 sexual assault and subsequent out-of-court settlement. So an independent investigation will now be launched to look into how Hockey Canada dealt with the allegations. So Hockey Canada maintains no federal money was used in the undisclosed settlement. A lot to unpack. Let's first begin with a reaction to this story.
Well, online, it seems like everyone is supporting this funding freeze, and no one seems outraged over the Minister of Sport saying that this is an deeply entrenched culture. Those were his words.
Her words.
And in the, her words, yeah. Sorry. And in the past, many Canadians haven't even been able to stomach hearing about that culture. And that culture, I think it's all connected to the sexual assaults, the bullying, the hazing, the racism, the toxic masculinity, the violence. It has been reported on for a long time, but it feels like every time it's reported on, at least in recent years, I know because my name's often attached to anything online when a hockey story comes out, the writer sort of begins to sort of wax poetic about the culture of hockey, you know, the sound of blades on ice, and how could this ever happen in this great sport of ours? They react like it's the first time they've heard about this in deeply entrenched culture. But as early as the 60s, the Globe and Mail was publishing a story about this culture called What Happened to Hockey? In the 70s, there were multiple investigations and committees created with the goal of solving violence in hockey from both the parents and kids, little kids on the ice. And in 2020, former NHLer, a person I consider somewhat of a hero, Daniel Carcillo, filed a class action suit against the Canadian Hockey League on behalf of players who suffered physical, mental, and sexual abuse during their time playing in the Junior League. And 2019, the New York Times wrote, the television personality Jessica Allen drew backlash for criticizing hockey culture in Canada, specifically mentioning white boys who are often bullies. She and her network, CTV, later apologized for those remarks. Think about that. Just 2.5 years ago, I had to apologize for saying something about hockey culture. So it's 2022. I'm a glass half full kind of gal. Maybe this is the moment that things will change, that the country will listen, and organizations may act in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just there for this.
I mean, Darren, are you do you follow hockey sports in particular? I mean, culturally, it's not to hockey. This is, some would argue, across many sports.
Well, yeah, it's across sports, and it's also across entertainment. The idea that, especially like hockey, junior hockey is a real lottery. Some of these kids are going to go on to be rich and famous people, and people want to protect the people who are going to be rich and famous, and they want to protect their relationship with the people who are going to be rich and famous. And that's the hard thing to break through in sports and entertainment and all that, is people have a vested interest in protecting the perpetrators. And so I think as a culture, from 2.5 years ago, where it was something maybe you would get in trouble for just being like, hey, this seems bad. And I think now kind of the society is kind of like, we should try to stop things that are bad for people who can't stop them themselves. You know what I mean? It's like, and of course that's a good thing. It's good for everyone. And also it creates a culture. You know, you're teaching These are kids, right, in junior hockey. These are young people learning how to live their lives. And then they grow up and become adults who have learned this behavior and what's okay and what's not okay and how to treat people. Mm-hmm. And then it happens even in the NHL. These are adults like Sheldon Kennedy and Kyle Beach were victims of crimes as well. And so I think the idea that as a society we should be trying to fix things from the ground up is a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
And it's good to see that everyone thinks the funding freeze is a good idea. Mm-hmm.
I do want to jump on that idea of who's got interests where.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I took a look at the roster of that 2018 juniors team, and I looked at, you know, the juniors, as you said, that's the next stop is probably getting scouted into the NHL if they weren't already.
Right.
There's at least five names on that team of, I don't know, 19, 20, 21 guys from the 2018 team. There's at least five who are massive superstars in the NHL today.
Right.
Now, there are allegations that eight members of the 2018 juniors team sexually gang assaulted a young woman. Eight of a team of, let's say, 20 guys. So I don't know. I'm going to throw a full-blown hypothetical out there because we have zero details because mm-hmm. there's a lot of secrecy around this and protection, perhaps. What if one of these massive stars in the NHL today gets implicated and named publicly? Will he get named publicly? So this is where I realize when you put the money where your when you put your money where your mouth is, this is not about hockey. It's not about sports first to me. This is literally a situation where our culture has to ask whose rights are more important,
right.
A sports hero's rights or an alleged rape victim? Sure. That's the question here. And I hope if you've got daughters and you're sitting on somewhere watching this, that you think about the alleged victim here and maybe not your favorite hockey hero. Mm.
It's not just young girls who have been implicated, though. There's been many stories about hockey coaches and the treatment of young boys. So I just, but to go back to this particular story, I can't help but wonder, like, what, as a mother of a son, you know, any mother of any son will tell you they come out no different than anybody else, right? Like, they're young and they're cute and they're vulnerable and they're funny and they're quirky. And so what happens between that stage and what I'm already starting to see in my son's class? He's not particularly sporty. He's surrounded by a bunch of very sporty kids. And already I can feel he feels ostracized. He feels outside of it. And I have this dilemma because I know sports are wonderful for kids. And yet gendered sports, when you talk about that, there is also this, there's a lot of dark sides.
Yeah.
And because we're not talking about it, and this isn't exclusive to hockey, but I worry about taking this person who's lovely and kind and generous and sweet, and I'm not saying that that can't be possible, but it's a bit of a toss of the dice of like, throw them in with this. At what point do things turn toxic, or could they turn hyper masculine in a way that is deeply uncomfortable? Would I know about that? Because many, many parents will immediately jump to, oh, no, not in my kid's team. No, that isn't happening here. But what if it is and you just can't see it?
Mm-hmm.
All I know is that we don't hear allegations of women's hockey teams or women's soccer teams that look like this. We've never heard
a
story.
Cultural
so
problem.
There's this, in the same way that right now we've been criticizing the Catholic Church, for example, no one is saying Catholicism is terrible. No one is saying that there aren't good people and good leaders and whatever. But what we are saying is that for many years, lots of stuff was going on and it was covered up. And it needs to come to light and people need to look at their garbage and they need to look at problems in institutions and they need to do better. So unless we start looking at it critically and being able to say, you know what, yeah, there is a problem, we got to do it, we continue to
and
make the same...
And recognizing that this story is not exceptional.
That's right.
Sadly, as sad as
that
is.
As sad as that is.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what you pointed out, where the minister called it a culture problem.
Mm-hmm.
That indicates that it's a systemic institutional problem, that it's not just a few bad apples. Because, you know, in those reports that we have been reading about over the last few days, they've said this wasn't a one-off incident.
No.
There are two others that were being investigated. They said that this happens once or twice a year. It's a pattern. So again, to go back to what you're saying, Cynthia, it's a culture. And I think for a long time, a lot of people in this country didn't want to see it that way because it's so closely identified to what certain Canadians identify as being part of the Canadian
identity
persona, whoever.
Yeah.
And you know, to go back to those kids that you're talking about and Jaya, it was almost like, you're not Canadian if you don't do this.
Correct.
And you don't, you're not Canadian if you don't love it. And you're not Canadian if you don't defend it. Mm-hmm. And what does defending it look like? Actually not listening to somebody when she's telling the truth.
Wow.
And so what we have to do is unpack all of that. Can this example do that? I want to have hope, Melissa. I want to have faith in the system, but the cover-ups and the cost and who they're protecting, they're prioritizing, have always prioritized the superstar men. So I would like to be wrong.
I would like accountability. I want a consequence. I want names. I want accountability to show that we can do something right. Mm-hmm. For today's hockey players, today's daughters, and the young ones coming up. I want names.
Okay, so this is a juicy one. Would you tell your friend if you saw her husband on a dating app? One woman is taking her quandary to the Washington Post advice column. She feels her friend should know, but she's afraid, of course, of causing drama. Darren, very curious. What would you do in this situation?
Well, first of all, let's not pretend this lady is afraid of causing drama. Is there another reason to report this? Darlene, I wanted you to know. Listen, I don't like to stick my nose where it doesn't belong. But, oh, we do sit next to each other sometimes at PTA meetings. I want you to know. Get out of here. Of course that's this woman's goal. But also, yeah, I mean, first of all, that's all she wants to do is stir up stuff. Also, the name they gave in the real story, they're like, we'll call him Jed. But Jed, where is this taking place? That this, oh, what's a common man's name?
Jed.
Jed. He was on the app Farmers Only, trying to meet somebody. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing's insane. I mean, I wouldn't tell. I'd be like,
you wouldn't tell.
You wouldn't tell.
No, I'd be like, you guys need to settle this yourselves.
So you wouldn't tell, like, you're a buddy, you see his wife.
I would say, so the woman is saying, should I tell the wife who doesn't know her husband's on the dating app? I think if you're going to tell someone, you should tell the husband. I'm going to tell her if you don't tell
I
her.
Did that. Okay,
yeah. Oh, my God.
I did this in
you
real
did
life.
Not.
Yeah, I was in university, and I was friends with two people. I was friends with both of them, and they were a couple. She went away for the summer to go be at a camp counselor or whatever, and then he was there, and he started dating my friend. I assumed that they had kind of just had an agreement and been like, we're separating for the summer.
Right.
But then my friend came back from camp, and she's like, bit weird because I'm getting a distance feeling from so-and-so. Let's call him Jed.
Jed.
Jed feels a little bit distanced from me, and I was like, oh, so I called up Jed, and I was like, you've been dating my friend Julie, and so you better let her know. He did not, so I let my friend know.
I did. Fair warning.
They stayed together, and then it became very awkward.
And did you lose out on this friendship? Did they sort of ostracize you?
I felt for a little while, I'm still friends with her to this day. I talked to him less, but it did feel the
impact.
Are
they together still?
No. No.
Oh,
no, gosh. No, no. But it's tricky when you get involved. It is tricky.
Yeah, now all of a sudden you're in the middle of this relationship.
Right.
Which you're right. You don't know. Maybe they had an agreement or whatever.
All the above.
Yeah, I always feel it's like, well, just...
Let nature take its course.
But to your point earlier, when you let nature take its course, in these situations, it's always going to be drama, whether or not you intend to start it or not. So my thing is that on this dating app, the friend was single. She, right. I don't know, what names are we giving here?
Helga?
Joan. Okay, Helga. Yeah. Let's go with
Helga.
Okay.
These people are hideous on this dating app. Helga and Jed.
Jed swiped on Helga, who knows Jed's wife.
Right.
So if you're Helga, you're like, oh, I'm getting implicated in drama because he chose me. He wants
presuming
to
that
get
he knows
with,
Helga.
He wants
true,
to get with me. So I understand what you're meaning. You were like, yeah, they all want to start drama. I get it. But drama already. Because even if Helga's like, oh, I won't say anything, inevitably, like, things happen where the rumors start. And the woman who ends up swiping and agreeing doesn't know he's married and then sees, maybe they go out on a date. Maybe somebody sees them. Now she's a homewrecker. Now mm-hmm. she's like, oh, I didn't know this guy was married. I didn't know they had an open relationship. If they haven't disclosed the open relationship to the rest of their friends, now the friends are calling me the kind of woman that would date a married man. Then it's drama. Naturally, this is all drama. I can't
it's
follow this.
Drama.
So would you tell her not? Would you avoid the drama?
I need a flowchart.
Screen cap and drop it in the group chat is what I probably would do.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm with you.
And I think Deb on Facebook might be with you too.
Okay.
She writes, that's a hard question to answer, having an ex-husband who cheated. No one wants to tell the wife, and she does not need to know. But be prepared, because it's often the messenger that takes the heat. Approach carefully and be prepared to lose at least the husband as a friend. Oh, girl.
Well, no one cares about the husband's friendship.
Yeah, who cares about him?
Be prepared. At least this dirtbag doesn't want to be your friend anymore. Well, who cares?
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, put yourself in the other person's shoes, though. If I didn't know and didn't have an open relationship with my husband and I had friends around me and I didn't know that they knew that he's creeping around on the...
You know what you do?
I would expect them
to
tell
me. You would be like, hey, you'd get the app and you'd be like, let's just pretend that we're single.
Oh,
and
you'd
like, be swiping and be like, oh, doesn't that... That's how you do it.
Oh my God.
That's
how you know what we did in high school? We were like, let's write a note. An anonymous note that your boyfriend is cheating on you. Do you know how many times my girlfriends and I did this?
Were you stuck it in your desk?
Yeah, you put it somewhere where your friend is going to be. Because no one wanted to be the messenger that got caught in the crosshairs. So you write a note.
Yeah.
Just wanted to let you know you should check out your boyfriend. He's cheating on you. You put it, I don't know, in her bag. You put it at her desk and then let nature take its course. And then
let's
like,
bring that into adulthood. Box. Write a little note, airdrop it. Could have been anybody.
Okay, we're going to switch gears. Just in time to beat the summer heat, you heard it here first. Ketchup popsicles? I know. It's disgusting sounding, at least to me. This classic condiment is joining the popsicle party, apparently.
Oh, Kwame!
Unlucky us. Oh, we are going
to
be trying
Welcome to the show, Darren.
Why would you do this to me?
What a great day for you to come to our show.
You didn't know that you were doing Fear Factor today?
Oh, my
God. I did not
What do we think of this idea?
Well, we're going to find out, everyone.
Okay, try it.
I'm not going to wait because they're melting.
Oh, mine's
a little broken. As popsicles are wont to do.
Okay. Oh, my God. I'm so excited. Can I have a... Wait, hold on. Nope.
You know what's wrong with this popsicle? It tastes like ketchup.
Oh, my God. That's what it tastes like.
I'm done.
Ketchup.
A Caesar. Mm-hmm. A Caesar on a stick.
It's good. I'm coming around on it now.
Uh-huh. It tastes like a Caesar.
But why do I want...
My head can't do it. Because when I see that, that beautiful shaped thing, I want to put it in my mouth and I want to taste strawberry. I want to taste lemon lime.
Yeah, totally.
Wendy's almost done. I just want to say. She's almost
raspberry.
Done. What She's
is
almost
wrong
done.
But I do not want to taste a Caesar.
So good.
A Caesar cocktail.
You know why? Because a Caesar, to me, is never cold enough. And this is like perfect.
It's like a frozen Caesar.
I dig it.
Because they shove so much stuff in there.
But presumably that also doesn't have vodka in it. So does that matter?
It could be.
Darren, what's your take?
Yeah, if there was vodka in it, I would eat it. But some things aren't meant to be frozen.
Yeah.
I think. We'll file this under crime against humanity.
Yeah, I think so. You're like, what?
Speaking of vodka, I don't know if this is a segue or not. You have a new comedy tour.
I do.
Called Drinking in Public. Maybe it includes frozen ketchup. Caesar.
It will now. Popsicles. We're giving them away free at every show.
Exactly.
Ketchup popsicles.
There you
Caesar
are.
Popsicles.
Look,
there
it looks like it could be in your glass. Cover. It could be this in that glass. Anyway, tell us about the tour and tell us about the show.
A martini glass full of ketchup. Delicious. it's called Drinking in Public because of COVID. And finally, it's, you know, maybe it's not done. We don't know. Who knows? Maybe it'll never be done, but at least we can drink in public again. So I'm going around and telling jokes about what I was up to over COVID, which was having a baby and renovating a house. We bought a house and I thought, I could renovate this. It turns out that's hard. And I did not know that because everything I knew about renovating a house, I learned off of TV. And they have editing and also skilled contractors. So they have two things I don't have. So it's about that and the time I got sucker punched in Halifax.
Whoa.
And,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I got my whole face smashed up. My cheekbones were collapsed.
My gosh, that's terrible.
What happened?
When I was shooting Mr. D. I was waiting in line for poutine, and the guy behind me was very angry about how long it takes to get poutine. It's true.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I had to get, my face put back together. I had, surgery to pop your cheekbones
out. I'm so sorry.
And now you're finding the humor in that somehow.
Yeah,
I guess that's what you do.
Did you ask the surgeon to look more like Jason Sudeikis?
Oh, my gosh. I was just going to ask that. Because, it's your free shot. So it's like, I'm not going to be mad if you do.
I should have said Ryan Reynolds. What a mistake.
Jason's
going to count. Wow. Listen, Darren, you're in one piece. Glad you're here. Glad you're able to go out on tour. again. And thanks for joining us for all the topics under the sun today.
Thank
really
you for everything
it.
Except for the ketchup popsicle.
Yeah.
you know. So I am a big believer in the importance of inspiring and empowering women. And that's exactly what Mercedes-Benz aims to achieve with their She's Mercedes initiative. It's a program that celebrates high-achieving women. Now, last year, I was so honored to be featured in their campaign, The Power Suit Project. This year, I'm also excited to help pass the torch on to some new and very deserving women.
Joining us today is a young race car driver featured in the latest Mercedes-AMG and She's Mercedes initiative, Nicole Haverda, along with her coach, Melanie Patterson, who's joining us remotely, and the president and CEO of Mercedes-Benz Canada, Ava Visa. Welcome to you all.
Ava, I'm going to begin with you because this year, as part of the She's Mercedes platform, Mercedes-AMG is celebrating the achievements of three women specifically in motorsport, including Nicole. What inspired this year's campaign?
Well, you know, this year we're celebrating 55 years of Mercedes-AMG. And at AMG, we always used to challenge the status quo. So when it comes to motorsports or car technology, and so we thought it would be a nice idea this time to challenge the expectations on how a race driver should look like.
Loves it.
Oh, wow. That's a great statement. So, Nicole, I want to talk to you next because a big congratulations to you, to all of your teammates for your hard work and all of your accomplishments in racing. It really
Thank
is
you.
Astounding. So tell us the reaction that you had when you heard the news that you would be featured in this Mercedes-AMG initiative.
Initially, I didn't get the phone call. My dad did. Oh. It was a rough day at the office, you know, just lots going on. And he was just really upset. So he, like, put his legs up on the table, and he got a phone call, lots of emails. He never answered anything. He was like, oh, yeah, just another person trying to discuss something. And he actually answered one phone call, and they started saying, like, oh, yeah, she'll be part of a documentary and, like, a campaign. And so he answered like the emails and stuff, and he was super happy, and he was really emotional as well. He was like in tears, and I'm not an emotional person, so I was like, that is crazy, you know. It was just insane, but it was really cool.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And Melanie, you coach this group of women to compete in a 3-hour endurance race at Button Willow Raceway in California. What do you hope the platform they've been given through this She's Mercedes and Mercedes-AMG initiative helps achieve?
Well, I think it's great to have the support of Mercedes-Benz Canada and Mercedes-AMG to help highlight these women and break the barriers. Ideally, girls think, hey, maybe I can go to the track instead of staying at home and compete with their brothers. Ultimately, hopefully we don't have to have this conversation later or down the road because it will become more normal. But right now, being a female race car driver is still a novelty, and the She's Mercedes initiative is going to help fix that.
Oh, that is so great. We know, Nicole, it's not common to see female race car drivers, period, especially not young women like yourself, for sure. You got your start in racing, though, before you were even a teenager. So take us back. How did this love even begin?
Yeah, so I was 12, and my parents, they took us for a road trip. We were visiting family and stuff, and we went to the Austrian Grand Prix. And we, right when we got there, we were like, I was watching the cars go by, and you hear the sounds, and I was like, oh my gosh, I want to get there. And I was asking my dad, like, how do I get there? I really want to get there. And they thought it was like a joke or something. You know, it's not common for a girl to want to race a car. And so I really wanted to get there, and I just sent emails, and, you know, I got into karting. That was my first step. So
into go-karting.
Yeah, go-karting.
That is incredible.
It was really fun.
Can I ask how old you were when you started karting?
So I was 13 initially, but I did start rental karting. I did a couple when I was like 10. You know, when you're young, you go with friends and stuff, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah,
initially. Can I say old for some kids who
is,
actually spend some boys who
start
karting.
Younger than
they
young.
Start at like 4 sometimes. Yeah.
Oh,
it's
my
insane
gosh.
How young people start. Yeah.
Well, you've just had your 16th birthday. You're still incredibly young, but I got to ask, do you have your driver's license yet?
Yeah, I just got my learner.
Yeah.
So it's like I need a supervisor still. So it's kind of strange.
That is so funny.
Since
it's like a learner's permit?
Yeah, exactly.
You need a licensed driver with you?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That is hilarious.
Funny. Oh my God, the irony. Melanie, you got your start in racing in the early 2000s. What was your experience like being a woman in a predominantly male sport?
Well, it was very good for me. I didn't really have any big issues, although... My coach usually had to pre-qualify the teams just because energy is so important in racing and team energy, and you really needed to make sure that the team honestly believed that a woman could do the job. But other than that, everything was really good. We had to, as females, we have to work harder in the gym to bridge the gap of the upper body strength. But ultimately, if you represent yourself as an athlete and not play the woman card, you're going to be respected for your craft.
Interesting. You know, Ava, you work, generally speaking, in also a very male-dominated industry. It's the automotive industry. And yet, here you are achieving phenomenal milestones. For example, becoming the first female CEO of Mercedes-Benz Canada. Massive. Mm-hmm. So how did you manage to break through what I'm sure were a myriad of glass ceilings along the way?
You know, I've been working in the industry now for more than 20 years, and of course it's very male dominated, but I never reflected so much on that. I was so determined to finally come to a position where I'm able to influence these beautiful cars that I was always in love with. So I never asked myself if I'm going to achieve it. I was only working on the how. And I remember there were many meetings where I was, especially when I was in my younger ages, in my 20s, I was the only woman in the room. And sometimes people would only listen to me because they hoped that I would say something silly. But you can decide whether you're mad about this or you simply see it as a chance and say, okay, at least people are listening to me. But then you have to have a point.
Ava, I want to stick with you because sometimes women in male-dominated fields, they talk a lot about feeling the need to maybe tone down some of their what would be called stereotypically female characteristics in order to be taken seriously. And have you ever experienced that? Did you experience that, especially because you did start in the industry so young? Did that ever cross your mind that, you know, I've got to tone down some parts of my character?
I did, but mostly I decided to not do it. And I think that was the best thing. So I quickly learned that actually raising questions is more powerful than having an opinion or fight for something. So it's simply by challenging the status quo and asking, like, why is that so? Why do you think this is better? What if it was the opposite? So this is even more powerful than fighting against something. And I was always successful with that way. And the way I experience it, if people like being around you and if people feel safe working with you, then they can achieve the best things. And I think that made me successful.
Now, Melanie, like Ava, you are in a leadership position. So beyond the actual technical skills of racing, what is the top lesson you're trying to teach the young women you coach?
I think one of the hardest lessons today is social media and how to navigate that, especially for young girls. Usually what you see on social media is diametrically opposed to what a professional athlete should look like on social media. So it's really hard when you have young girls and you're trying to teach them that that's not the right way. And they can really quickly change their career path or lose their credibility by how they present themselves on social media.
We know that the sport of motorsport, it has evolved a lot over the last two decades. Social media definitely is part of that evolution as well. But overall, how has the industry changed for women in that time, if at all?
The industry has changed because there's more representation now. We're seeing more females in the paddock in general. We're seeing engineers, team management, mechanics, drivers. So we're seeing a lot more of that. So it is getting a lot easier to be part of it and to see yourself in a role like that.
Now, Nicole, thanks to your career success and the She's Mercedes initiative, you are now an example for young girls who might be interested in getting into racing. And I understand that you've had a recent experience where this very thing happened.
Yeah, I was actually at the kart track and I was just walking, you know, to my kart and stuff. And this little girl, she comes up to me and she says, I started racing because of you. Aww. And I was like, oh, that's so nice. You know, it's just good for young girls to look up to another girl that's already racing instead of just looking up to another guy. You know, they don't look it's very different for a young girl. And it was just so nice. It felt so good that I'm actually inspiring younger generation.
That is a great example of one woman inspiring another woman. And Ava, before we go, we hear a lot about how women and women's careers were disproportionately affected during COVID. So how do you think corporate leaders should be addressing this?
Well, I think the key is flexibility. If your employees, no matter being male or female, ask for flexibility, then you should give it to them because this is what makes them more successful at the end. And so I think, I at least always enjoyed working with women, even if they were working part-time, because some of them achieved in 25 hours more than another full-time employee.
Yeah. They know how to multitask.
And it's their passion. They work because they love it.
Mm-hmm. It's a big difference for sure. Ava, what advice do you have for women who might be considering, you know, ramping up their career now, maybe post-COVID-ish, now that we're finding this new normal? What advice would you give?
Well, I think it would be never take no as an answer. Don't let them turn you down. Mm-hmm. Simply go for it. Don't overplan. just execute and go for it. Take what you deserve.
Take what you deserve.
Loves it.
To all three of you, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been so eye-opening and wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And a big thank you to Mercedes AMG and She's Mercedes for highlighting these incredible women and more, and also encouraging all women to shine. We are stronger together. That is it for this edition of The Social Podcast. Bye for now.
Subscribe to The Social Podcast so you don't miss a fiery debate. Until next time, socialites.